morning, comrades, and welcome to Morning Shulk with Preston Skatnik. I'm Preston Skatnik. That's Grant Alinsky. Welcome to the program. And when I say program, I mean we will program you. Good morning, I'm an idiot. Hey, it's February 1st. Yes, February. How many of you when you were a kid just said February? February. No, February. It's a brutal name to pronounce. It's a brutal month to pronounce. But anyway, good morning. Hope you're ready to go. If you're not, you're just going to have to face the day anyway. And so with that, we will start with some scripture here. Proverbs 15:15. All the days of the oppressed are wretched, but the cheerful heart has a continual feast. You know, there are a couple different thoughts that come to mind. One, our guest that I interviewed yesterday will play some sound bites from that interview later on this morning, about an hour from now. Ji-Hoon Park. Just for a second, imagine if, I wrote this in my blog. We've seen how it can happen. Look at the people still wearing masks. The people that wore masks. The people that were bullied into shots. Now think about North Korea. And a nation that completely controls every input into the life, the brain, the spirit of everybody in the country. Somehow Ji-Hoon knew there was a better life elsewhere, and she escaped, only to be forcibly returned to the country, imprisoned, and had to escape again. She's been out 29 years. It's a remarkable story. But the latter part of this line, the days of the oppressed are wretched. That's living under oppression, living in North Korea, living in communist states, in socialist states and nations, living under the oppression of you are property. You are not a human being. That was a problem in every country of the world at one time or another, not just America. America didn't invent slavery. It imported it and then rid itself of it. But it goes on to say the cheerful heart has a continual feast. And it's odd, but I'm reminded of the movie Shawshank Redemption. A wrongly imprisoned man, at one point in the movie, talks about music and that it cannot be taken from his mind. Cheerful thoughts, cheerful attitudes, a cheerful heart is like good medicine. Being cheerful changes everything. My challenge is find that joy that is anchored deep in your life, and you can never be robbed of it. You just can't. In the New Testament, it says to count it all joy when you face trials and tribulations because of what comes out of that. Joy, not happiness. See, that's another interesting thing. It distinguishes happiness, which is surface, from joy, which is deeper. 10 minutes after the hour, dig into the American Patriots Almanac. It's a It's a very special day in my world. February 1st. We'll get to what the Almanac says and what I have to share next on The Morning Show with Preston Scott. Well, my plants are loving the rain. Got just a handful of new plants in the ground in pots, containers. Slowly recovering my yard from the disastrous spell of uber cold weather we endured. But anyway, 12 minutes past. Grant Allen running the show. I'm here in Studio 1B. It's show 4858. Play a little bit of the interview I did with Ji-Yoon Park. The entirety of the interview is on the Conversations podcast and in turn on my blog page right now. You can listen to it. We made the decision to put it as a podcast in its entirety versus playing it in its entirety because Ji-Yoon has a pretty thick Korean accent. Now, she's been outside of the country for 29 years. She lives in Manchester, England. But she still carries the accent. And there were parts of the interview that were far easier to understand. And so I'm going to play a couple of clips from that. But the podcast avails you of the ability to stop and go back and listen to something. Just move the player back a few seconds and listen to a clip again. And it's a great story. Because she got out. It's filled with tragedy because she's never spoken to a member of her family since. She doesn't know what's happened to her mom, to her brother. She knows her father died, but she doesn't know what happened in terms of where he was buried, if he was buried. She knows nothing. But she got free, and she has a family. It's a very different world, and there were some very insightful answers to a couple of things we talked about that, you know, obviously her story is chronicled in a book. It's called The Hard Road Out. And on my blog page, I've got a couple of links, HarperCollins, as well as Amazon. If you want to get the book, it's, I would imagine, a magnificent read. February 1st, 1960. Four black college students begin a sit-in protest at Woolworth's lunch counter in Greensboro, where they'd been refused service. See, this is why I believe that you just teach history. Now, this is February 1st. We've decided to say Black History Month. And I think that's such a disservice. And I think it's pandering. I have chronicled, in fact, I probably do more chronicling of the civil rights movement on this program than anywhere else that you can find in the media that's just like a radio program or a regular TV show, something that's not specifically dedicated to that subject. In just what we do on the program, we chronicle the civil rights movement throughout the year. We don't relegate it to 1 month. We talk about the events as they happened, when they happened. Do you know the name Franklin McCain, Joseph McNeil, Ezell Blair Jr., or David Richmond? You don't know those names because you haven't been taught because of how we've approached this entire subject. So there you go, this date in history. Also on this date, my son Jordan was born. I can't begin to describe, parents, you know what I mean, the joy of a birthday. The joy that watching a baby grow into their life, what it brings. I am part of a blended family, and the blend of our family has been, I think, just amazing. No family's without its challenges, and ours is the same like yours is. But when I think of my son Jordan and think of the young boy he was and the young man he is, it all makes sense. So, Jordan, happy birthday, son. I love you. Exciting things afoot on the morning show with Preston Scott. Executive staff meeting. Brainstorming sessions. Retreats. For us, a retreat is if we go hang out at an Arby's. We're a high-budget show. Hey, guys, let's have a staff retreat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, let's meet at Arby's in an hour.
That's a retreat.
Anyway. No, wait, no. It's not. Workshop. That's what we call these things, right? Isn't that the new term? It's a workshop. Amelia Island? Pfft, no. Chick-fil-A, baby. Let's do the Chick-fil-A workshop. That's where we go. I got this note from a friend of the program. Delightful lady. That is really good at what she does. And we got to talking about woke words and language and how things are just, I don't know if they're irretrievably broken, but they're broken. And I will never, ever worry about that kind of thing. I I'm going to probably just chalk it up as, I'm too old and just excuse myself by being old. But the fact of the matter is, if I were Grant's age, I would not be buckling to this. And I know Grant well enough to know he's not going to. We're just going to say what we're going to say. No one's intentionally trying to offend anybody. That's not what conservatives do. Conservatives don't go there. They can get snarky, mind you. And if you want to play with fire, Scarecrow, okay. But as a rule, going back to Rush's speech at CPAC, we want the best for everybody. But we're not gonna bow a knee to this stuff. Anyway, sent some information to me about the AP style book, and we've mentioned it a couple of times over the years. The Associated Press has a style book which guides its writers and informs them on how they should be wording things. Now, let's just pause for just a second. Wouldn't you think a news gathering agency would have a pretty limited list of rules for its writers? Multiple sources, corroborate news, write fair, balanced, and accurately, keep your personal opinions and biases out. Grant, you're a convergence journalism major. Wouldn't that be a fair and concise set of rules for a writer covering news?
Sure.
You wouldn't need much more than that. And I'm sure there's maybe something out there, like don't end a sentence with a preposition. Thank you, Walmart. But generally speaking, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Because You go at this with the idea that, well, they should know not to end a sentence with a preposition, and they should know how to handle, you know, certain aspects of writing. They're writers. That should be something they covered in their education, even if it's middle school and high school. So inside this note, the AP says you shouldn't say the homeless, the mentally ill. Their original tweet said you shouldn't use the in front of groups. For example, the French. Now, the French weren't very happy about it. Released their own tweet back to the AP saying something to the effect of, we are the embassy of Frenchiness. Poking fun at the AP for being so ridiculous. Now, the AP deleted its original tweet on that, the French, and carried the tweets with this. We deleted an earlier tweet because of an inappropriate reference to French people. We did not intend to offend. Writing French people, French citizens, etc. is good. But the terms for any people can sound dehumanizing and imply a monolith rather than diverse individuals. Removing the word the doesn't change that at all. French people is simply a bit wordier than saying the French. Anyone who thinks the French is a monolithic description of the entirety of the French population is a rube. Such is the silliness of the Associated Press. So my question is, do you really trust what they report? Five minutes after the hour, the morning show with Preston Scott. Good morning. Grant is over there. I'm Preston, and I am here. A lot of parent-related stuff. Parent advisories, parent-related stories in just a few minutes. But first, the big story in the press box. I am going to likely upset some of you that are dear friends, and I hope you know by now that's not my intent, but I accept that that happens. Trump's losing me. I'll go so far as to say that if DeSantis decides to get into this, he'll get my vote over Donald Trump in a primary. Donald Trump's character flaws are coming strong. Now, we all know he has them. We all do. But there are some character flaws I just don't think you can afford to have as the commander-in-chief, as the president of the United States. And things that he did when he was president, he did some wonderful things policy-wise with very little help, nothing but headwind. I credit him for that. That said, he continues to display traits that I won't call childish, I will call concerning and alarming. His decision to try to attack Ron DeSantis and suggest that if he dares run for office, he's disloyal. That is a character flaw that you find in people that are dangerous. That if you're not 100% with them, you're an enemy. That doesn't work for me. It just doesn't. He said at rallies in South Carolina and New Hampshire, there are Republican governors who did not close their states. Florida was closed for a long period of time. They're trying to rewrite history. Ron would not have been governor if it wasn't for me. So when I hear he might run, I consider that very disloyal. Excuse me? First of all, you were the Republican president of the United States. It was your obligation to try to help him get elected. Secondly, it may not have been because of you. It may have been because of a policy decision to support school choice, which swung the meter with black moms. I mean, if you want to be analytical about it, I don't know that Trump moved the needle at all. I don't know that Trump moved it at all in Florida. I mean, think about it. Did Donald Trump's support of Ron DeSantis cause you to change your mind from Andrew Gillum? Of course not. So that type of bravado is, that's Trump 101. But it's this attitude of, how dare you run against me? Dude, earn it. Instead of saying, you know, I welcome Governor DeSantis to the race. We're going to have a spirited campaign, and I'm sure we'll get to talk about the issues. That's what a grown-up does. That's what someone without the character flaws that I believe exist does. To his credit, Ron DeSantis didn't take the bait. And we'll get to that next hour. But I'm warning you now, pay very close attention. Grant, I know you supported Trump, I think probably in a similar way that I did, policy-wise and so forth, but maybe not personally in how he conducts himself, but maybe not, I don't know. What are your thoughts on his decision to once again try to take on Ron DeSantis by insulting him?
Well, I mean, this isn't like some new information that we knew about Trump. Because if we remember back to the 2016 primary, he made things very, very personal. Remember?
With everybody.
Little Marco, he tied Ted Cruz's dad to the JFK assassination. He was just going off the rails. So I'm not quite sure I understand who he was 6 years ago is 7 years ago, same guy. And I'm afraid that for two things, just watching what's happened in the last week, right? You've got the Lincoln Project types, the Liz Cheneys, the Rick Wilsons, Karl Roves of the world.
Rhinos on steroids.
The rhinos on steroids are lining up behind DeSantis because they don't like Trump. But then Trump goes and does a rally with Lindsey Graham, the king of the rhinos.
Yeah.
I don't get that move. I'm much more dismayed by that those kind of alliances than I am the
petulant rantings of the child Trump.
Yeah, because that's not new.
It isn't new. But for example, he's kind of wrong about Florida.
Well, I will say, I remember this distinctly because my wife and I experienced this. We got married in the middle of COVID.
Yep.
And we decided to take a short honeymoon to Savannah because Savannah, Georgia, Brian Kemp kept Georgia open at times when beaches and, you know, places around Florida were closed. So Florida was closed for a short time. Now,
not a long time.
That's right. There was a quick course correction. But don't forget, there was a short time when Florida did follow the general accepted thing. And here's my theory is because Fauci at that time was being propped up by Trump.
Yeah.
And DeSantis,
he had Trump's ear.
That's right. And DeSantis wanted to look like, well, yeah, I'll definitely. And if anyone remembers, Brian Kemp got the ire of Donald Trump for not shutting down the state.
Not following Fauci.
Correct. Not following Fauci. And at that time, Fauci was being propped up by Trump. And so Kemp looked like the guy that was bucking the MAGA movement of like how we handle COVID. And so it's so wild to think back to that a couple years ago. But those were kind of the dynamics going on.
It reminds me of the old expression, politics makes for strange bedfellows.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we are right now. I'll just simply tell you that every time Trump chooses to, and look, I hope DeSantis doesn't run.
Yeah, agreed.
But if he does, and it's the two of them, that vote's easy. For me. Trump and who knows who else, Nikki Haley's allegedly going to get out there and run? Nah. Nah. Not down with Nikki. But we'll see. There's a lot that has to happen. Again, these are character traits I just don't think we can afford to have in the White House. But if it's him or a Democrat, well, that's a no-brainer. Trump would get my vote. But it's why I return to the Republican Party, because I will have a say in the primary. No doubt about that. All right, when we come back, parental advice, parental warnings, all kind of wrapped up into one segment here on The Morning Show with Preston Scott. 10 minutes from the top of the hour. Note from a listener. Facts. Trump was heavily criticized for trying to open the country by Easter weekend, April 2020. Kemp opened Georgia the week of Easter, April 2020, and Trump criticized him for opening early. DeSantis officially moved to open Florida 2 weeks later on May 4th, 2020. And 2 weeks after beach rentals were open again, and I know because I rented the weekend of 5/22. So there you go.
In case anyone, you know, I feel like we sometimes get a little victim of short-term memory loss. It was just a couple years ago, but a lot happened in the last couple years. But yeah, those are true. And Brian Kemp is no knight in shining armor. He's got his major issues in terms of election integrity, what happened in the Georgia elections, and shoring up those. But hey, on COVID, he was one of the governors that kind of led the charge.
Well, it was largely Republican governors almost exclusively that kept states open at all. So anyway, parents, even the U.S. Surgeon General citing reports and studies say that 13's too young for social media. Now, obviously, I think that's should be well beyond that. He goes on to say 16, 17, or 18 is a more effective strategy, making sure your kids don't get exposed to harm. It's one of the rare examples of Surgeon General and I being on roughly the same page in terms of philosophy. I've told you, if I were raising children in this era, there would be no way a smartphone would hit their hands till they're in college and likely paying for it themselves. Flip phones, texting, mom and dad only. Same study shows that academic success can be determined by when you allow your child screen time. Believe it or not, there are parents handing portable devices over to their kids at 18 months. And this study says not before 18 months. At 18 months is still too early. But what's interesting is they're finding a correlation up to the age of 9, where tablets, TV, etc. Researchers found that increased use of screen time during infancy was associated with poor executive functioning once the child was 9 years of age. And of course, we're talking cognitive skills, emotional regulation, learning, academic achievement, etc. Now this segues to a warning. Illinois man facing kidnapping charges after three children from Ohio were found in his car. Lake County Sheriff's Office said in a Facebook post it was contacted on January 21st by the parents of two missing children from Middleton, Ohio. Their 12-year-old and 14-year-old daughters were missing. Also missing was a 15-year-old boy who is a friend. They said one of their cell phones was tracked to an address in Beach Park, a village of 14,000 people in northeast Illinois. Police determined that 19-year-old Michael Negron lived at the address, drove the car that matched the description of a car seen in Middleton. He had been communicating with the 12-year-old for several weeks through Fortnite, Snapchat, other video games, and eventually moved to text messages and FaceTime. 12. Now, I don't have to tell you, to a 12-year-old, someone that age is dreamy. They think it's the coolest thing in the world. A middle schooler thinks a college-age kid, an old high school kid, someone older, interested in them is cool. It's not. It's predatory. It's abnormal. Look, 6 or 7 years when you're older is nothing. 35-year-old dating a 28-year-old, nothing. At that age, that is a gap of maturity that is Grand Canyon. My point in all of this is once again to hammer home the point to moms and dads. One, know every password your kid has on their phone. Make sure you have access to tablets, laptops, phones, and anything that's on it. You're buying it. You're paying for it. It's your property. Pay attention to what your children are doing. My advice is get them off of social media. If they're younger, don't ever allow them on it until they're in college. That's my advice. Come back. Some sound bites from an interview I did yesterday. Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of the morning show with Preston Scott. Grant Allen running the show. Number 4858. 4,858 programs. We are into this. And we've got J.D. Johnson coming in next hour with the Talent Training Group. A ton of stories in the news. It seems like more self-defense stories in the news than ever, and it's likely because more outlets are picking it up and reporting on it because the mainstream outlets refuse to do so. But we'll get JD's take on not just that, but constitutional carry and whether, you know, it's good enough. We've got a lot of people that are really kind of hot about the fact that it's not open carry. I understand. I get it. So we'll talk about the amendment process, whether that's possible. But this segment, I wanted to share parts of an interview, and it could spill into next segment a little bit, with Ji-hyun Park. She escaped North Korea not once, but twice. And her story is chronicled in a book that was released yesterday, called The Hard Road Out. It's a HarperCollins release. You can get it on Amazon or HarperCollins' website. I've got a link to it with the full interview on the blog page at WFLAFM.com/Preston, WFLAPanamaCity.com/Preston. Grant is going to push out a Twitter link to the blog page where you can link to the book. We're not going to play the entire interview because, candidly, Ji-hyun's accent is really thick. And we thought, after listening back to it, which we did, the best thing to do was to play a couple of clips that were the best in terms of intelligibility, clarity, and to allow you to listen to all of the interview on the podcast, where you can stop it, go back a few seconds, listen to her answer again, because I will tell you, the second or third time through, it's a little easier to understand what she's communicating. She has lived an incredible life. She's 58 years old, and half of her life was spent in North Korea, and her story of escape is just remarkable. I'll just leave it at that for right now. One of the things we talked about was emotions of what it's like to be in a country where you are forbidden to have access to anything outside of your country. Anything else is, in essence, smuggled information, smuggled experiences. Here's what she had to say on the subject of emotions, and it's fascinating because it gives us an insight into how North Koreans have been programmed to think.
When I lived in North Korea, I didn't understand what is personal emotions, because North Korea, we have got two emotions. One is happiness and one is hatred. But these emotions, everything is political emotions. Happiness with the dictator, and the hatred Americans and the South Koreans. So North Korean people, they still the North Korean people, they don't know the what is the personal emotions. And my language also limited. My language is always is a political language. And we don't describing the our personal emotions by my language. So I was the language persecution in North Korea. But this book, you know, that this, when I write this book, I found out that is, I am also human. And also I found out that is my personal emotions.
Isn't that interesting? The only two emotions North Koreans are allowed to experience, happiness, that revolves around the dictator, hatred, which revolves around Americans and South Koreans. And only through the process of writing a book did she discover she was a human with other emotions. It is 11 minutes past the hour. You're just joining us. Good morning. Welcome. Sharing a couple of clips from an interview I did yesterday with Ji-Hyun Park, author of a book co-authored with a South Korean, Saelin Chai. And the book is about determination and the importance of asylum. Ji-Hyun was able to escape North Korea the first time when her father was close to passing, almost as if it was a dying wish. She got out of the country, ended up in China, but sadly was sold, human trafficked, at the age of 29, to a farmer who, in essence, impregnated her. She had a son. The farmer then decided he was done with her, turned her back over to authorities, and she was forcibly returned to North Korea. She was imprisoned, punished, grew sick. They eventually said, yeah, we're done with you. And they left her outside the prison, and she managed to escape again. Her brother, her father eventually died, but her brother, her mom, other family, she's not been able to have any contact with, and she shared what that's like.
No, because it's my younger brother sent back to North Korea 20 years ago, but I still don't know that my younger brother survived or not, because he was the last time he was the military soldiers. So I don't know the where he's about, where he's him now. And also my father died in North Korea when I left in North Korea. So I don't know the when exactly my father passed away and where he was buried. And my mother and my sister is also disappeared. So I can't contact, you know, that I hope to contact my family, but I don't know the where is them. So
my mother has disappeared. Her brother obviously had escaped, but then was forcibly brought back to the country, likely imprisoned, perhaps forced into the military, as all males are. I just recommend you go to the blog, check out the interview, give it a couple of listens. It's about 10 minutes long. And check out the book, The Hard Road Out. But what I want to do for just the remainder of this time here is I want you to think about what's happened in our country in recent years. Now, we have here the Hermit Kingdom, which they call the socialist miracle. Everything is controlled by the government. What they eat or can't eat, they don't have much food. What they consume on television, radio, movies, internet, news, education, everything is controlled. Nothing outside is allowed in. Think of what's happened in America under Joe Biden and Democrats just in the last 2 years. Think of COVID. You will mask. You will get the shot. Think of the work that they've done with Facebook and Twitter, the mainstream media outlets that we have demonstrated to you work on the behalf of Democrats. Controlling the information that you consume. If it's not what they approve of, it's not allowed, or it's made very difficult to find. If it's a Twitter feed or a Facebook feed that's not in keeping with what they want, they put algorithms together to suppress it. How far are we from where they are in North Korea? J.D. Johnson next hour on the morning show with Preston Scott. I mean, and I know that sounded a little maybe over the top, but seriously, okay, if North Korea is like an example of maybe one of the worst countries in the world, dictatorship, totalitarianism, I mean, squalor, you name it, is America moving closer in that direction? I can't believe I'm saying this, or closer to freedom? Which way is it moving? Under the direction of the government?
I don't think it's controversial at all to say that on the ideological spectrum, American left-wingers are much more in line with North Koreans than historic Americans. It's the same. Now, they may not be to the same degree, but it's a part of the same ideological tree. Like, you can find the logical conclusion to many of their arguments in complete totalitarianism.
They just believe Hillary Clinton has said it. They can engage in that form of government better. They can be the true enlightened administrators of socialism. They just got it wrong. They're not as smart as we are. We'll do it better. That's what the AOCs, Ilhan Omars, Hillary Clintons, that's what all the Bill Gateses, of the George Soroses, that's what they believe. Oh, those North Koreans, they just went too far. Anyway, we're moving that way. And that's why discussions like we had the other day on, do we go back into Facebook's world, even though the world is really screwed up, or not? I mean, it's 5-1. That's the response that you gave us via email and phone call. 5-1 in favor of going. And I'm not saying 5 calls to 1 call. No, add it all up. Dozens and dozens. 5-1. That's the ratio. That doesn't make our mind up for us, though. That is influential on our discussions. All right. Ironic. The late Jerry Garcia from the Grateful Dead. He's a guitarist and one of the most renowned weed smokers in the world. Well, he passed away. His family has gotten into the marijuana business, and it's called Garcia Handpicked. Get a load of this. They are leaving California. They are doing business somewhere else. They're moving because of regulations and taxes under Gavin Newsom. How funny is that? It really is.
Things are so bad, the pot smokers are leaving?
Yes.
Wow.
That's crazy. And then there's this. Biden supporter Steph Curry, who I think is probably a pretty decent guy, but just so wrong philosophically about everything. Well, apparently there's a discussion to put a low-income housing development that could view his $30 million home in Atherton, considered the highest most expensive zip code in the country last year, Atherton, California. Suburb of San Francisco, I guess. $8 million an acre. That's what land sells for in Atherton. So Steph Curry and his wife don't want undesirables to have a view of his home. Quoting, "We hesitate to add to the not in our backyard rhetoric, but we wanted to send a note before today's meeting. Safety and privacy for us and our kids continues to be our top priority and one of the biggest reasons we chose Atherton as home." Now, he is the fifth highest paid athlete in the world. So they have petitioned the government to not allow a low housing development within eyesight of their palatial estate. They've also petitioned that if that doesn't work, they would like the city to build a fence and shrubbery around their home to protect their family from the watchful eyes of anyone in that neighborhood. Should that not be sufficient for the state, we ask the town commits to investing in considerably taller fencing and landscaping to block sight lines onto our family's property. Wouldn't you suggest that it's his responsibility to do that? I'm just saying. Plant some hedges, brother. I know where to buy some. And 35 minutes after the hour, J.D. Johnson in just a little bit. Moments away, sleepless in Seattle, as it is now, where residents are truly sleepless. It's not a movie. New big story in the press box to go with the old big story in the press box. Joe Manchin joining all Republican senators opposing Joe Biden's ESG climate investment rule. It was set to go into effect on the 30th. And the Biden administration Department of Labor unveiled the rule in November. Allows retirement managers to factor ESG into investment decisions. A disapproval resolution led by Senator Mike Braun of Indiana will be introduced today. Companion bill in the House introduced by Representative Andy Barr, Republican from Kentucky. A congressional passage of the resolution will allow Congress to overrule the administration and kill the regulation. Of course, this is politicizing investments. It is, I mean, I can't even begin to think about how stupid this is. But this, again, go back to our last half hour, government controlling, now telling you how you must invest, telling investment managers how they must advise, that it's just fine to advise on the basis of ESG scores, whatever. The other big story in the press box, Ron DeSantis has responded to Donald Trump once again. You know, again, here's the adult thing. If Governor DeSantis gets, for example, if you're Donald Trump and you get the question from the media, there are some states where Ron DeSantis is polling ahead of you. What would your thoughts be if Governor DeSantis enters the race? Here's the grown-up response. I would welcome anyone who wants to debate and discuss the future of this country. We need to put America first. If Governor DeSantis chooses to enter the race, we will have a robust campaign and opportunities to discuss any differences that we may have on how to best lead this nation. May I go so far as to say, if Donald Trump spoke like that, it might clear the field. Think about it. If Donald Trump acted mature, like a grown-up, like someone who could engage in detente and be a statesman, wouldn't you think that would have a lot to say about who decides to run against him? Because if he becomes appealing, by being a grown-up in the playground? He wins followers. Don't you think? Don't you think a response like that wins people over? For his part, DeSantis didn't take the bait. He correctly points out people are able to render judgment whether they reelect you or not. And I'm happy to say, in my case, not only did we win reelection, we won by the highest percentage of the vote that any Republican governor candidate has had in the history of the state of Florida. That's called a mic drop. He, to my knowledge, didn't mention Trump by name, just responded to the question about Trump running him down. Once again, taking the high road. If Donald Trump merely borrowed my verbiage and demeanor in how he approaches anyone who runs, not as disloyal, but welcome. That's a constitutional republic. We're made better by, how about that statement? We're made better by multiple ideas. Wouldn't that be a winner? You better believe it would be. Let the Donald know I'm here to help. I remember when Sleepless in Seattle came out. Always been a fan of Tom Hanks. Wish he wouldn't be as political as he is, but he's not the worst out there. Always been a fan of Meg Ryan until she had her surgery. Just age. It's okay. We all do. You know, if your eyelids start falling over your eyes and you got to get those cut back a little bit, I get that. You know, that's called seeing. You need to do that. But some of the surgery that some of these people go through is just ridiculous. But I remember Sleepless in Seattle, and I just thought it was a charming movie. Still do. I still enjoy that movie very, very much. Along with You've Got Mail. Same too. Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan, they have a kind of an on-screen chemistry that works. And so they went back with it on You Got Mail. But I remember Sleepless in Seattle because I thought when I first saw that movie, Seattle looks like a cool place. Because me personally, I don't mind the kind of weather we have. I don't mind the drizzly, overcast, and I certainly don't mind coolness, which comes in the Pacific Northwest. And I always thought, and I've visited Seattle, I visited Portland, I've been to those cities. When my dad used to do some NBA basketball, I occasionally made road trips to both of those cities. You know, I went to Rip City and you know, I forget what's Seattle called? The Emerald City? Is that it? Anyway, been there, thought it was charming. But now it's turned into a cesspool. And I'm not speaking that from, you know, a personal perspective, just what you read and what you know is happening in the news. And then I come across an op-ed written by a Seattle native, Elizabeth Economo. She writes, Seattle, a city in decline, is obsessed with equity, the centerpiece of diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. Once lovely and livable, the Emerald City, there you go, the Emerald City has lost its shine. Under the banner equity, the city council in 2021 cut the police budget by nearly $35.6 million. Today, SPD staffing levels are at an alarming 30-year low, with 400 officers having left in the last 3 years. As a Seattle native and daughter of hardworking Greek immigrants who sacrificed everything for their children, I no longer recognize the pristine home of my youth. Since returning from New York City in 2007, I have witnessed Seattle's steady decline. Once vibrant downtown where I worked in my 20s has turned dystopian. Boarded up storefronts, private security, homelessness dominate the urban landscape. Just last week, the Nike store announced it was closing after 27 years in business, citing a spike in crime. Next month, the theater across the street will meet a similar fate. I wonder how much worse can it get? Equity is based on the false premise of equal outcomes. Not equality of opportunity or equality under the law, whereby resources are seized from one group and given to marginalized or preferred groups. She closes in a very lengthy piece by writing, "Inequity when the left goes too far." Clinical psychologist and author Jordan Peterson claims that equity, quote, is inexcusable both morally and practically, as it identifies perpetrators who must be punished and victims who must be coddled and protective. Similarly, equity in Seattle's gone too far. Overdose deaths driven by fentanyl is one indication. The rising homicide rate is another. Urban decline and human suffering are at once rampant and heartbreaking. I do not want to leave Seattle. It is my home. But the city's obsession with equity is making life less safe for everyone. Sleepless in Seattle now has a very broad meaning. All right, I have waited intentionally to share this story because it's tough. It's a tough story. And this story, I wrote in my rundown, some people just are not human. Now, J.D. Johnson's sitting here. We're going to talk next hour about a bunch of people that just aren't human. We know this. But there are just certain things that happen sometimes that you just say to yourself, where is your soul? I couldn't share this earlier because there may be too many of you eating breakfast. And I will tell you now, if you're eating, you might want to just turn the volume down, come back to this later in the podcast. Now, though I don't own a dog or a cat or any animal whatsoever, I love animals. Always have, always will. I'm that guy that wants to see every zoo in every city and just sit there and watch animals. That is a happy thing for me to do. The smell was unbearable, the shelter wrote. There was no way a dog could have ended up like this overnight. How long was it going on? How long does he have? Did he get to us in time? So what are we talking about? We are talking about a dog in Boca Raton that had been cemented to a sidewalk and left to die. The dog has been named Trooper. Maggots crawling from his fur, severe tooth decay, overgrown nails, discovered on a sidewalk on Yamato Road in Boca on January 23rd. Burns, urine, at least 22 medical conditions, paralysis, heart murmur, corneal ulcers, enlarged prostate, worms, periodontal disease, ear infections, urinary tract infections. They got him out of the cement. It took a long time. Small little dog. So someone pushed the dog into freshly poured cement on top of a sidewalk, pushed the dog in there until the cement set, and walked away. That's why I wrote, some people just are not human. I hope. Now look, this does not rise to the level of the torture and abuse we read about, parents delivering to their children, criminals delivering to their victims. This is an animal, but this is an animal. And we're called human beings for a reason. Thankfully, the other side of humanity has shown up. They tried to raise $2,500, the clinic, to try to offset the medical costs. They've raised more than $16,000 at this point. I bring up the story because, first and foremost, I hope before God Almighty they catch this person. Because this person is likely a budding sociopath or already is one. That is a level of meanness and evil that so far to to the best that we know, has only been delivered to a dog. But anyone with that capacity has the capacity to be such a harm to humanity and society as a whole, they need to catch this person. I'm sharing this story in part because my show just happens to be popular in Florida, not just this part of Florida, not just the Big Bend and the Panhandle and South Georgia, but we have listeners all over the state. We have listeners all over the country, but we have listeners all over the state. And I'm hoping someone in Boca is listening and that you happen to have heard something, seen something, know something. And we can bring this dredge of humanity to justice. I know it's just a little dog, but we're supposed to be human beings. And our ability to offer compassion and empathy and love and care is what separates us, allegedly. Come back with Hour 3 of the Morning Show with Preston Scott. That was brilliant. Talk about the ultimate teaser to a segment. You just had it. Grant Allen over there running the show in Studio 1A. I'm here in Studio 1B at Show 4858 of the Morning Show with Preston Scott. It is my son Jordan's birthday. Happy birthday, young man. And we are joined by one of the co-founders of the Talon Training Group, Talon Range, Talon Holsters, Talon, everything. J.D. Johnson in studio with us this morning. Of course, Talon Outdoors is a must-listen to broadcast each and every Saturday. Subscribe to the podcast. You'll have a great time, and you can stream it live on the 100.7 WFLA stream on Saturday morning at 10. J.D. Johnson, hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're going to just leave everything else out of it. I'll leave that fodder for Charlie and you to have at.
I'm upright, breathing, and talking. So
there you go.
All good.
And you're smiling too. That's a good thing. We have spent the last week. Last week we spent a lot of time between Sal Nuzzo and Art Tom and Luis Valdez and Lee Williams. We talked a lot about constitutional carry, and then lo and behold, on Monday, I guess it was, we had a bill. But not everybody's happy with that bill. Give me your thoughts on what's been advanced, which is constitutional carry, but not open carry.
Yeah, that's it's been an interesting week. There's a lot of stuff has gone on this week in the gun world.
Yeah,
between constitutional carry and the ATF.
Yeah, I want to get to
finally,
that too.
Finally registering the letter that's been floating around for a few weeks. So anyway, constitutional carry. You know, I'm all for it. It's I think it's been there all along. I think we've had that right all along since that amendment was written. You know, since the Second Amendment was written. So it's just, you know, to me, it's re-enumerating the fact that we have a right to defend ourselves and we have a right to carry a firearm, carry a weapon to do it. Them leaving open carry out of this bill is probably more of a political move, trying to get support for the bill to pass. So I'm not opposed to open carry. I just don't think it's a smart thing to do tactically. So therefore, it doesn't really matter to me that much.
There are many that say, look, this is just a simple constitutional issue. Open carries in 47 states. It hasn't proven to be an issue in those states.
Yeah.
And it allows people the option of carrying openly or not. And most don't. Some do, but most don't. For the reasons you talked about. Some believe if we don't get open carry now with this governor in office...
May not ever happen.
Exactly. And that would be my concern.
I agree. I mean, that is definitely a concern that we've had Republican governors and Republican legislature for years now, but Governor DeSantis is very pro freedom, and it's what it boils down to. He is very pro freedom, pro constitutionalist. So, mm-hmm. The open carry. I don't know. I just want them to get it pushed through. They can always readdress the open carry in a separate statute if it's going to be a game changer. I'd rather have the constitutional carry than not.
Yeah.
And if they want to readdress the open carry in another statute, then another bill.
You're a businessman too.
Yep.
You and Charlie own a gun shop. What is your suspicion about what constitutional carry will do for the business? I'm guessing it will help.
It may help in the sales, the equipment sales. It's going to kill us in the training business.
You think?
Oh yeah. It's people are not going to want to spend money that they don't have to spend if they don't have to take a class. You're going to have the majority of people that would right now mandated to go to a class to get a carry permit that may not go anymore because they're not mandated. It may help us in the long run in training because people realize, hey, I might need to get some training.
Plus, there's still a point for getting a CCW.
Absolutely. They're not going away. CCW's not going away if you want to carry in other states. So.
And if you want to get your gun right away.
And if you want to walk out the door, want to buy a gun and walk out the door with it. Yeah.
All right. We got some stories in the news to talk about. We're also going to talk about this ATF stuff. My understanding is the lawsuit's already been filed. We'll reset all that next on the Morning Show with Preston Scott with J.D. Johnson. J.D. Johnson with us from the Talon Training Group, Talon Range, Talon Outdoors, all things Talon. I'm surprised you guys haven't been sued by Hawks and Eagles.
Well, a lot of lawsuits going Ospreys, around these days.
Yeah. We were talking about the ATF and the fact that this ridiculous pistol brace, they've decided in essence to legislate.
Yep.
So explain what the ATF has just done. We know that there's a lawsuit. And let's talk about this for a minute.
All right. So start with at the beginning. About 10 or 12 years ago, a company introduced a thing called an arm brace for AR-15 pistols. And it allowed people to put a device on the buffer tube of their AR-15 to attach it to their forearm if they had some kind of a disability. Well, people immediately put them on there because they kind of looked like a shoulder stock, and they started using them like a shoulder stock. The ATS vacillated back and forth about four different times. You can have it on your gun, but you can't put it to your shoulder. Well, yeah, you can put it to your shoulder, but they haven't been able to make up their mind or deal with this thing, even though they approved it, and the manufacturers of these devices got letters from the ATF approving the item as an accessory to an AR-15 pistol.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go, rock on for a while. ATF, back a year or so ago, said, hey, we're getting ready to ban these things. And they've put out a bunch of surveys to people and said,
coincidentally,
what do you think
with Joe Biden as president.
Yeah. So they put out a bunch of surveys, and everybody says, this is a really bad idea to ban these. There's too many of them. The industry says there's somewhere north of 20 million of these devices on the out on the market or out in private hands.
20 million in one.
Yeah, 20 to 40 million. Somewhere between 20 and 40 million of these things have been sold.
Oh, my.
The ATF's numbers say that somewhere between 3 and 8 million of them exist. Okay, so let's take the bottom number in all of these big numbers that we're throwing around. There's 3 million of them in existence. That's one pistol brace for every 86 citizens in the United States. 86, one pistol brace for every 86 adults in the United States. If that's not common use, what is? If one out of 86 people have them, DC versus Heller addresses firearms in common use. So we've got a court case that already says, hey, this has been in common use for 10 years now. So, and the ATF just basically came out arbitrarily and said, we're going to ban these things. However, if you want to send us a picture of your gun, send us your fingerprints, your photograph, your address, all this stuff. If you'll send us all this information and picture of your gun, we'll give you the $200 tax stamp that we normally would charge $200. You're in possession of a short barrel rifle. We have redesignated this pistol brace as a short barrel rifle if it's attached to the firearm. So if you'll just send us your information, we're going to give you a tax stamp for it. So you got 120 days as of yesterday. You got 120 days to start this registration process, finish this registration process, and get a tax stamp. Otherwise, you're going to be a felon, and the charge and the punishment is no different than you converting illegally your AR-15 into an M16 or an M4, making it full auto. Same exact punishment, same exact statute federally is the violation of the NFA Act. Get 10 years in prison.
What would your advice be to someone listening who has a pistol brace right now because, regardless of the reason, they have one? Because, fact of the matter is, they're trying to bully and bait people into registering a firearm.
Correct. Take the brace off the gun. Put it out in the garage for now. There's so many lawsuits filed yesterday at
the
same
time. Would
you do
it now, or would you wait 119 days?
119 days. At day 119, if they haven't got this sorted out, take the brace off, remove it from the premises, put it somewhere else, get it away from the gun to where you don't have it anymore.
My hunch is that this is going to be this entire rule is going to be suspended by a court.
Yeah,
until it's settled.
I agree. Until actual legislation is passed, because that's how we write laws in this country, is we take things before the legislature and they decide on it, and then it's signed into to law by the executive branch.
My advice to you is take no pictures, send nothing, and do what JD talked about. Just wait. 16 minutes after the hour, back with more of The Morning Show with Preston Scott. Nothing that a good edit can't take care of. 22 minutes after the hour of The Morning Show with Preston Scott. Great to be with you. JD Johnson with me from the Talon Training Group, co-host of Talon Outdoors with Charlie Strickland and Grant Allen on Saturdays. And I told you I got an email. Someone preemptively sent me an email yesterday and said, please ask Charlie or JD these questions. One. Can my 17-year-old daughter take the Talon Concealed Carry class?
Yes. We prefer that people under the age of 18 attend with a parent, have a parent there. But yes, she can.
Number two, what are the current restrictions for gun purchases for under 21 in Florida?
In Florida, there are the only under 18-year-old people that can buy firearms in Florida are military, law enforcement.
So anyone...
Nobody under 21 can buy a firearm in Florida unless you are exempt status by being a law enforcement officer or military.
In the military. Yeah. But military active does get
duty,
a waiver?
Active duty.
Active duty.
Yes. Not National Guard, not reserves. Active duty.
Question three, what are the current restrictions for target practice at Talon for under 21s?
Under 21, well, under 18, we want a parent there. 18 to 21, they can come by themselves and shoot.
So someone 18 to 21 cannot own, cannot purchase, but can come and rent a gun?
They can possess a firearm under 21. So you've got some conflicting stuff going on here. Okay. 16 years old, a 16-year-old person has to buy a hunting license. At 16, we can drive. At 16, we have to buy a hunting license. So a 16-year-old can possess a gun for the purpose of going out hunting or shooting or whatever. 16-year-old can possess it if that's what they're going to do.
They can have a rifle or a shotgun in the trunk of their car or in the back of the truck.
Yep. But, like I said, we have a rule that says under 18, we want a parent or guardian there. We want an adult with someone at the range if they're under 18.
But that person that's 18, 19, or 20.
You can gift, which is this going to address the last question?
This is the next question. I own two Ruger LC9S pistols, 9mm for concealed carry. What are the current restrictions for me gifting one to my soon-to-be 18-year-old daughter?
The day she turns 18, happy birthday, here you go. She can give it to her.
That seems so weird to me.
The 18-year-old can't go out and buy one. They can't get a carry permit, but they can possess it at 18.
What do you think happens under constitutional carry for that 18-year-old?
I don't know. Another question. I haven't read the bill. I honestly haven't read the proposed legislation.
I would imagine it embraces the current 21 age limit, which is foolish.
The 21-year-old thing happened. That's part of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act.
Yeah.
So that was a Florida law.
It was a reaction.
Emotional reaction to something that really terrible that happened in South Florida, and they said, we're not going to let 18-year-olds buy guns anymore. Before that law, an 18-year-old could buy a long gun, could not buy a handgun. That's a federal restriction. 21 to purchase a handgun, but you could be 18 and buy a shotgun or a rifle.
What would you advise this parent to tell their daughter as of right now if they are gifted that pistol at the age of 18 in terms of guidance for...
Get them some training, please.
Well, obviously they want their child to have that concealed carry course, but what guidance would you give them so far as where they can legally have that firearm, though they're under 21?
Yeah, they can legally have it in their home. They can legally carry it in their car as long as it is securely encased, not ready for immediate use. They can carry it...
In the glove box,
in a case... Whatever else, please tell your child not to leave it in the car when their car is unattended. Can't take it to campus. Can't drive it and park it on campus. Can't take it to school, obviously. So school days, leave it at home. Lock it up, secure it at the house somewhere.
But if they're out and about doing shopping, going out with buddies at night, friends, you know, whatever, just... Know the rules.
You can't carry it on your person without a permit right now.
Right.
And you can't get a permit until you're 21. So she's not going to be able to carry it concealed until she's 21 under the current law. And I don't know what changes are coming with this new proposal.
Well, if you're listening, I know you are, you're doing all the right things to prepare your daughter to be a safe, responsible gun owner. So that's some guidance for you this morning on The Morning Show with Preston Scott with J.D. Johnson of the Talon Training Group. When we come back, we turn to the news. Sadly, there's a bunch of stories of people defending themselves with firearms. We'll see what we can learn from it all. No, you haven't time traveled to the weekend. It's not 10 a.m. It's 35 minutes past the hour of 8 in the East. 7 in the Central, and wherever you're listening, welcome back to The Morning Show with Preston Scott. I'm joined by J.D. Johnson of the Talon Training Group, co-host of Talon Outdoors, and we're talking personal defense. Now we're going to transition into that specific subject. Just some random stories, and I'm just curious, are we hearing more about these types of cases where a homeowner or a business employee is defending themselves with a firearm because there's just more media out there, or because we do have more need, there's more crime?
I think probably because there's the crime rate, the more crime, and we're seeing in other jurisdictions around the country where there is essentially zero enforcement on things like snatch and grab, retail theft, robberies, this, that, and the other going on at stores. We're seeing it all. We're seeing it on the news all over the country. And I think you have some of those people that are maybe bad guys in California that might move to somewhere thinking that the laws are the same where they have moved to, and not realizing that, no, don't come to Florida with that because somebody down here will shoot you.
Yeah, you're in Illinois, New York, and Florida, and California. It's a different world.
Yes. It is very much a different world.
Yeah.
And there's some funny stuff on Instagram and YouTube with people, honey, now don't come down here because we will shoot you. So, you know, there's a lot of truth in that. There really is.
Story one, Eldoran, Wisconsin. Clearly not a big community. It's a small little town. 79-year-old man was followed home from a business by a 22-year-old who stabbed him, but the guy was able to get his firearm and dispatch the young man. Ended it right mm-hmm. then and there. That seems to indicate an issue of awareness.
Absolutely. But, you know, he probably was aware at some point in time. At least he was prepared to deal with it. And, you know, anybody can be got. Does that make sense to you?
He was in his vehicle yeah. when the guy came up and attacked him in his garage. He got out of his car when he was attacked. So he was followed.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I'm just, you know, it's hard for me to sit back here and say, yeah, he should have paid better attention and realized that he was being followed, this, that, and the other. But we all get occupied with our thoughts in different places sometime, and we don't always. It's very tiring to be constantly vigilant. It is very, very tiring.
But would you say that we are kind of at a threshold now where we almost don't have much choice?
Yeah, I mean, we should be.
I mean, we're not talking living in fear, but we are right. talking about living with a level of vigilance.
Yes, we need to, that's where we all need to be. It is very physically and mentally tiring to be that way, to live in that condition all the time when we're out and about. But yeah, that's what we should all strive for and not let our guard down.
Florida resident shoots, kills man, breaking into home through window. That's kind of open and shut.
But bump, yeah, yeah. That's any attempt in Florida. If you're inside your house and someone is attempting to kick the door in, pry the window open, you don't have to wait till they come through the door. The Castle Doctrine lets us gives us a lot of leeway in Florida to defend ourselves or defend our home.
More stories in the news. We'll talk about with J.D. Johnson. One segment left here on the Morning Show with Preston Scott. What would you say? Here's a story of an 80-year-old man in Chicago. Just this is reported yesterday. Hospitalized Monday following a home invasion, followed home at 10:30 in the morning. And when he opened the door, a man and woman allegedly forced their way into the home. Man began fighting with the male suspect. He was able to get his firearm, and he shot the intruder in the chest during the struggle. And so don't know if the guy died or not. I don't know that that's relevant at this point. The question becomes for, you know, we have folks listening that are older here. You know, talk radio is the friend of a lot of older people. We're kind of their companion. Older people are targeted. Absolutely. And I'm sorry, far more frequently than should be. They shouldn't be, but it happens.
Yeah.
What would your advice be to an older citizen?
You know, having a firearm, carrying a firearm is going to go a long way towards equalizing the playing field, the leveling the playing field to where you can, when you may not be able to physically defend yourself in a fight anymore.
Like the old days.
Yeah. It's Sam Colt made everybody equal. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things where absolutely I strongly encourage people with just less physical prowess and whatever the cause there is of that. You know, I mean, I'm be 55 next week. I'm not nearly as big and strong as I was once upon a time.
Yeah.
So I relate to that, which is probably why I'm more vigilant about carrying a gun everywhere I go.
But you grew up with firearms.
Yep.
Literally grew up.
Yes.
Before you were ever in law enforcement.
Correct.
A lot, if not most, have not. And I guess as I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about what you and Charlie and Talon do. And
it's the never too late.
Well, the importance of knowing what you can and cannot do and being trained accordingly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's you know, we live in a great state that has very, very well-written self-defense law. Take advantage of that, especially, you know, for people that, like you said, elderly folks or folks that are getting older that are not as physically fit or as physically capable anymore. It's, you know, it's way better to have a way to defend yourself than to just submit and be a victim.
Yeah, and husbands, if you've missed any of the earlier segments that we've done with Charlie and JD over the years,
Don't just go to the store and buy your gun a wife and hand it to her and say, here's a revolver.
Yeah. Don't go buy your wife a gun. Let her pick the gun out. Get professional training. Get professional help, advice, and don't, you know, let her try it out. Let her try it.
The fact is there are some firearms that she will not be physically capable of operating safely.
Or just some that she just won't like.
Right.
There's some out there that I don't like. You know? I mean, it's that I don't like as well as others. So, and it's, you know, if it's too heavy, too big, too whatever, she's not likely to carry it or use it.
And I guess the same applies to the guys out there, because you might be at a state in your life, your age, your strength, your dexterity, where certain guns just are not a good fit for you
anymore.
And
they once were, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you might get one shot off, and then the others are going to be who knows where.
Yep.
And you can find a firearm that can better match where you are now physically.
Yep, we see it all the time, which is why we do trade-ins. You know, it's why we rent guns.
Yeah.
There's guys come in all the time that said, I just can't handle this 1911, you know, 45 ACP anymore. I need to step down to something a little different. What do you got?
Yeah.
And go down to the range and rent it. You know, they come into the store and I say, okay, these are three or four you probably want to go try down at the range and head them that direction. I honestly can't choose a gun for you or anybody mm-hmm. else. I can only make suggestions.
Thanks as always.
My pleasure.
All right. J.D. Johnson with us. He joins us first Wednesday of each month. Charlie will be in the next time. They alternate back and forth now. They can only take me once a month. That's how this works. And, of course, you can listen to the both of them carry on each Saturday at 10, Talon Outdoors, here on this fine radio station. It's 46 minutes after the hour. Just a little addendum to our segment with J.D. Johnson. Charlie sent us a note reminding us that you can park on a college campus with a firearm in the car. Just has to be secured in the car. Can't carry it on campus. I don't know what the rules are if you live on campus. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me that you can have it in your car, but you couldn't have it in your residence. But I don't know. I do not know. It's so wrong. College campuses are open communities with multiple points of entry and egress, and I'm waiting for something to happen and someone to sue the state, the universities, for not being able to protect themselves.
And the problem is, we know the firearms are already on campus.
Of course. Bad people don't care.
They're already there.
The dude at Strozier didn't go, oh, wait, whoa, whoa. There's a rule that says I can't have this gun here? Oh, man, I gotta do something different. They don't care what the signage and the rules and the policies are. Anyway, this is brilliant. I don't know if you saw this, GA, but this is brilliant. Our boys at Project Veritas, to borrow from Not the Bee, went gangster.
Or they went goblin mode.
Okay, there you go. Thank you, 2022 word of phrase of the year.
Let's go.
Because the mainstream media is not covering the Pfizer story, Project Veritas rented an LED truck. And if you don't know how these things work, they have speakers, they have video screens on three sides, and they can play anything. They parked it in front of Pfizer in New York playing the interview with their executive.
That's so good.
This is how Project Veritas put it. We rented an LED truck, parked it outside of Pfizer World Headquarters in Manhattan today. Stay tuned. That is
genius.
That takes trolling to a level so beyond anything we can comprehend. Good on them. And that's why you support Project Veritas. If you give and support what they do, that's why you do it. They're going to end up in my giving. I just have to make a few adjustments, but they're going to get my money. They're doing too much good work.
They've got to be supported. Have to be supported. So, yeah, that's just too good.
Brought to you by Barino Heating and Air. It's the Morning Show 180 on WFLA.
Sadly, President Donald Trump continues to act like President Donald Trump, attacking Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Some of the statements, questionable. But the overall idea, bad. I've maintained that if Donald Trump took the approach of welcoming anybody into the Republican primary, looking forward to, I think I used the term robust, debate over ideas on the best course for this country, putting America first, and suggesting that the entry of anybody, even Florida's governor, would just bring more good ideas to the table and make us a better country and a better party and a better nominee will come out of it. You know what? If he just took that tone, he wins people back and he wins people over just by being more adult. That's the problem I have with Donald Trump. He just is his worst enemy. He's his own worst enemy. I'm probably going to write a pretty lengthy blog sometime in the next week about this subject. And I'm gonna take on what he should do versus what he's doing. Got to make a note right here. Blog. Had a great conversation with J.D. Johnson. That'll be in our Conversations podcast. Shared a few sound bites of an interview with Ji-Hoon Park. And that interview in its entirety is on the blog page now. The book, The Hard Road Out. She had to escape North Korea not once, but twice. A lot of respect there. Tomorrow, do it all over again. Big roster of guests, including January Littlejohn, suing in federal court a school district over gender issues. Happy birthday, Jordan Scott. I love you.